I'm Bill Quine. Welcome to this recording of Peel Heritage Trust, made at the Wesleyan Chapel, Peel, on Tuesday the 12th of October 2010. We had two speakers that evening, Mr. Bernie Quayle from Manx Radio and his wife Lindsay. Their subject was Our Manx Connections. We join the talk where Lindsay is giving her family's background.
I thought, well, I'll give you a bit of my Manx background, let Bernie tell you his far more interesting life than mine, and then after the break, with your permission, I'll tell you all about my Heights of Climb, which is my trip to Machu Picchu that I did nearly a year ago. So basically, my Manx connections are that my mother was Port St Mary, my father was from Bromborough on the Wirral, and he was stationed over here at the end of the war at Jerby as an engineer on the plains. Met my mother and got married down in Port St Mary, where four of us were born. He then used to drive the buses, and he was known as Little Ozzy because he's only about that big. And we've actually got a picture of him somewhere. My mum has of this little chap in his uniform standing by these huge buses that he used to drive. And then, I suppose because the money in those days wasn't very good, we actually moved to Scotland for 2 years, to Oban, where he worked on the lighthouses. Now, just a little aside from that, 2 years ago, Bernie and I went to Scotland for a holiday, and we went to Oban because I just wanted to see if I could find the place that I remembered we used to live. And in the town was a little museum of, it was like a boating fishing Mariners. Museum, wasn't it? Maritime museum, that was the word, yeah, maritime museum. And there's two elderly gentlemen in there, well in their 80s, and we got talking to them, and they knew all about the lighthouses that my dad had been on. There's a fabulous website actually dedicated to the Scottish lighthouses. But the other coincidence was that these two chaps used to be the people who took people from the Isle of Man to Oban in a ship called the Hesperus. And they actually took my parents all those many, many years ago. How odd is that? Because when I told my mum, she said, of course she remembered going on the Hesperus. So there was that. Anyway, we went to Oban, and then my dad became poorly, and we moved back to the Wirral, and I lived there till I was 20, and then my parents all emigrated to Australia. I stayed behind because I didn't want to go, and the whole family went. And then in 87, as a lot of you know, I came back to the island and moved to the Ballachallan in Dalby, where we ran that for 7 years. And then I moved back into Peel, where I have been virtually ever since and become a real Peelite. But the strange thing is that Billy Clegg, who's got the carpet shop, was doing his family tree and came up with my name at the bottom and all my family's name. And it turns out that his great-grandmother and my great-grandmother were actually sisters. And my mum remembers coming to Peel to visit an auntie. But of course, in those days, my mum's 82 now, but in those days it was a big journey if you actually came to Peel. She didn't remember coming that often, and she couldn't remember too much about it. So from that, I'm also related to Arthur Curry. And Billy Clegg's sister was actually living next door to my son Daniel. So it's amazing how things all work out. But I have found a little bit about the Crellans on here. I do know that the family did own West Hill in Castletown, which is now the Buchan School. And at one time were very big landowners in Castletown. My auntie has never been able to find the will that sort of makes it go out of the family. But my grandfather, Crellan, apparently signed it away one day when he was working, and somebody came in and shoved a paper under his nose and just said, sign it, and signed away his inheritance. And it went to another side of the family or something, but I don't know much about it, but all I know is we never got the money. So, as far as I'm aware, they're all to do with the Crellans in Orrisdale, Kurt Michael, and there's quite a lot of portraits still hanging up there who are my ancestors, sort of, you know, quite well removed, really. But my grandfather George Clegg Crellan, so obviously the Clegg is where Billy Clegg comes in with the family somewhere. But my grandfather was chef at the Balqueen Hotel, as it was in Port St Mary, for 40 years, and in the time of Mr Drain. Don't know if anybody... No, not Mr Drain, sorry, Mr Kelly. And then when he got to about in his 60s, they moved to Douglas, and he was then chef at the Metropole Hotel, as it was then, for Mr Drain, for about 12 years. He didn't actually retire until he was 74. And my granny had a boarding house in those days, as they called them then. Of course, they're all called guest houses now. But from the age of about 10... I got sent over to wash dishes and wait on tables and do bedrooms and things, as most of us did then. As soon as I'd finished all my schooling exams and everything, I was sent over on the boat. And then my mum used to come over with the rest of the kids later on. But my kids laugh now when I tell them things like we used to go around with a bucket with a lid on to empty all the pose from under the table, which I'm sure some of you'll remember, and the big mangle outside where we used to do all the washing, you know, do all the sheets and that, when there weren't enough for Clucases to come and collect them. Then after my granny finished with the boarding house, she went to be storekeeper at the Metropole as well. So as we got older, it was lovely because my granddad was the chef. We used to go down and have our lunches there, and we thought that was very special, sitting in the staff dining room having our lunch because my granddad was the chef. So that's my Manx connections, really. But I've just found some interesting facts here. It says here that the first mention of the name Crellan on the island is a John Crellan in 1610. And they say here that he was appointed as one of the lieutenants of the garrison at the time stationed at Peel Castle. So my history keeps coming back to Peel somehow. It says that they think that the name Crellan comes from the French Crillon, but they can't actually prove that. But they think there's a connection there somewhere, they're not sure. So this, there's so much on here, I just couldn't figure it all out. I need to go and sit down and do it all properly. But it actually mentions down here about Robert Quayle of West Hill marrying somebody called Harrison. And I know at one stage our name was Quayle Crellan. So there is another piece which I haven't printed off, but that actually talks about a Quayle marrying Ada Crellan, who I think was my grandfather's auntie of West Hill. So that's obviously where the Quayle Crellan came in. So having been, nobody in my immediate family has ever had a Manx name until I married Bernie. So of course my mum was thrilled to bits when I went back to Quayle because of the family connections. So that's about all I can tell you at the moment about my connections and how I ended up back on the island. And I'm sure you'll find Bernie's a lot more interesting.
I don't know whether it will be any more interesting or not. As a lad growing up on the Isle of Man, when introducing myself to people and saying, you know, it's Bernard Quayle, my mother hated Bernie, but it stuck with me ever since school days. But when I said Quayle, and which Quayle are you? And so I was able then to go back as far as my grandfather only in those days, and he was a well-known, well-established artist, E.C. Quayle. Thank you. That's all right. Do you want to open the door for me? I had vivid memories of my grandfather, Edward Christian Quayle, who, when I was a child, had a studio flat on the quay in Douglas. It was it was a basket weaver's in those days on the ground floor, and he lived on the top floor. But to me, with the snowy white long hair, he was a magical old man who had command over the birds of the air, because we'd go down with a little pot of stew and some bread, and he'd open the window and he'd clap his hands, and two seagulls, which he'd named, would come and sit on the window ledge, and he'd feed them by hand. And it wasn't until later in life I realized all seagulls do this anyway. But do you want to open my folder? And I'll tell you. Click on number one. My sister had endeavored to work on our family tree, and I discovered my great-grandfather was a cabinet maker with a business on Well Road Hill in Douglas. When a young man from Indiana was elected Vice President of the United States, J. Danforth Quayle, I happened to be working in the next state in Ohio, and the local newspaper contacted me because that way of spelling Quayle is unusual in the States. Most of it is Q-U-A-I-L, like the Irish would spell it. So I said, no relation. I said, but coincidentally, you know, it is a Manx spelling of the name. It wasn't until years later we discovered that his great-great-grandfather was a cabinet maker on Well Road Hill in Douglas. My sister got so excited, I said, hang on, Pauline, our grandfather didn't emigrate. His great-grandfather did. But this is my great-grandfather, Ned Quayle, and my father's youngest brother, Leo. He was a master carpenter, and at some point, I don't know what the date was, he landed the contract to refurbish Wavertree Town Hall. So he moved the whole family over there. It was a very long project, and as you can see, a lot of the woodworking that was done in those days was very labor-intensive and took a long time. So it was whilst he was working on Wavertree Town Hall, my grandfather was born in Wavertree. So this famous Manx artist is not Manx. He's from Wavertree. They returned to the Isle of Man. My grandfather then became established as quite a good artist. And he received the backing of a very well-known family, the Christian Buck family here on the island, who funded his education. He went firstly to the Kensington School of Art and then to the Slade School of Art, which is probably one of the best-known schools of art anywhere in the world. And the Christian Buck family funded his education. And as a mark of respect, he adopted the name Christian to say thank you. So he was never christened as Edward Christian Quayle. He adopted the name from the Christian Buck family. Liverpool at that time was a thriving seaport, and he set up a studio in Liverpool because he was getting so many commissions. He specialized in seascapes. If you go to number two. This was my granddad just before his death in 1946. It's how I remembered him. And you'll notice behind there's it's not an oil painting, but you can see Archibald Knox on the left behind him. You get number three. On the right is the portrait that Granddad did of Archibald Knox. They were very close friends and associates. On the left, unknown to many people, is the portrait that Archie Knox did of my granddad. But I'll let you into a little bit of a secret. Granddad painted Knox after the death of Knox because the family had there wasn't colour photography in those days. So they used a photograph my father had taken. My father was a brilliant photographer, of Archibald Knox. And Knox did the same using a photograph of my grandfather. If you go to number, next one, another example, in the late 30s, when they were knocking down Old Douglas, which is where the car park was, the museum asked my grandfather if he would do a series of paintings because, again, no colour photography. They wanted to show the way that Old Douglas looked in colour. So they commissioned 12 paintings of Old Douglas. And Dad went out, my father, and took all the photographs. You go to the next one. So you can see that's the photograph. Can you go back one? And there's the painting. And I've got all the original photographs that Dad took. If anyone has access to the internet, I put together a website, ecquayle.co.uk, and there's a subfolder within there, the photographic legacy of E.C. Quayle Jr. Fantastic photographs. This is one of my favourite paintings, and my dad picked this up at auction. John Keith of Crystal Brothers. Whenever he got an E.C. Quayle painting, he'd get my dad to go down and give him some background. It was one of a pair that he was commissioned to do by one of the shipping companies in Liverpool. And my dad used to take pictures, photographs of the paintings before they went out to the clients. And he couldn't believe somehow they'd become separated. And this had belonged to a family living in the north of the island, or a gentleman who'd retired here and passed on. His family came over, had no idea about his possessions, just put everything into the sale room. And John Keith, very kindly, knowing my dad, said, "I'd love to buy that. My 40th birthday was coming up." And John says, "Well, we'll see what we can do." And he just said, "Lot so-and-so, painting, £5, £10. And Dad bought this for £75. And it's one of the old tea clippers. We don't know the name of it. When Christie's came and did a charity evaluation here some years ago at the cathedral, out of curiosity, I took this along. And the art expert was so pleased to learn about Manx artists. I've done a lot of background searching on the various artists. And I showed him this. And he said, if I were to put that into one of their marine auctions, it would realise at least £10,000. So that got me a bargain. I can't remember what it is. Oh, yes. Granddad also had a contract with a firm in Manchester for doing old masters. And for years as a child growing up, this one hung over our mantelpiece in the kitchen. You can scroll forward. If you just... the ruler ball in the middle. Here, no.
Oh, there, sorry.
Oh, it's not working.
I'm trying to make it bigger, sorry.
It's Millet, the Angelus. And in the days before they were able to reproduce digitally like they do today, old masters, Grandad would sit down and reproduce an old master. And it would take an art expert to actually say, yes, but they were never sold as originals. They were just sold as reproductions. We had that, and also another one of a girl standing in front of a window with a checkerboard floor, which is another famous painting. That's the only one I ever took a picture of. He also did a lot of postcards. He used to walk up and down the promenade, knocking on the hotels, and he'd have this stock of picture postcards that he'd done. All he would do was make sure that he would incorporate that hotel and sell them a pack of postcards. Very clever. Right, you can go on to the next one now. This is one my father, he went everywhere with this camera. This is at Niabo Beach, where he set the camera up just inside a little cave, and is pointing out to sea that sunlight on the waters there. He said, this is the day he proposed to my mum. And the next picture will show the happy couple. They're very keen cyclists, both of them. And my father was the founder of Manx Viking Wheelers way back in the 20s. He was what they called the chief consul for the Cyclist Touring Club in the Isle of Man. and he would meet and greet visiting cyclists. And one of them said he was amazed there was no cycling club on the island. And my father and his brother Leo were at the Mitre Hotel with this chap, and they said, we should do something about this. So they formed, it was the Viking Leaders Social and Touring Club in its original name, because it was a social club. They would have dances every week, as well as going out, a huge collection of them going out every Sunday together.
What have we got next?
Oh, this is one of the last pictures of Mum and Dad. Eddie, his name was Edward Christian Quayle also. And my mum was Mary Margaret. Now, I mentioned that Granddad had set up a studio in Liverpool because he was getting so many commissions from the shipping companies. That's where my father was born. So he was not in Manx either. He was born in Birkenhead. My mum was born in Uri County Down. And so I was born here in the Isle of Man. As I say, cycling was a major part of our lives. Mum's bike was parked against the hedge. That's my brother Terry, or I always call him Teddy, but he's best known as Terry. And it's funny how that started, because when he came out of the army, when people were being conscripted into the army, he was dating a girl that had a slight speech impediment, and she couldn't say Teddy, and it came out like Terry Lee. So he became Terry from about the age of 20 onwards, but it's always Teddy to me. And that's me on the, well, we'll come to that in a moment, on the crossbar on my dad's bike.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Okay.
Right. I've always enjoyed cycling, and I still do, but nowadays, because I'm totally unfit, I have an electrically assisted bicycle, which is just fantastic, because the battery, when you turn it on, it senses the amount of pressure you are putting on the pedals and gives you a little boost. So if you're going up a hill, it's just fantastic. I went to St. Mary's Primary School, then to Ballacomeen, and then to St. Ninian's. And my parents had a guest house, boarding house, and we had on two occasions young men stay with us for lengthy periods who were what we call trainee managers with F.W. Woolworth and Company. And there's one particular that made a big impression on me. It was in my last year of high school, and it convinced me that's what I wanted to do. My father was still in business. It was Collister and Crail, the joiners in Douglas, and my brother had joined the firm, and it was assumed I would do the same thing. But no, I wanted to follow in Stan Wilson's footsteps and become a trainee manager in Mulberts. So I went and filled out the applications. I was due to take my GCE in June or whenever, and the then manager of Mulberts in Stranstreet, his name was Jack Harrison, gave my father a call and said, the trainee we have with us at the moment has just suddenly quit. Would Bernard be interested in starting? So, well, he hasn't finished school. The Easter break was coming up, and I went along to see Mr. Harrison, and he said, don't worry. He filled my application form out to head office, that I got 6 out of 8 passes in my GCE. And I started at Easter. I left school with no complications whatsoever. He did, as it happened, speak to Morris Holmes, who was the then headmaster, and he gave me a good write-up anyway. So the scheme was that you spent at least 2 years in your hometown store, and you started from the bottom upwards. When I left school at Easter, I was boasting to my peers, I'm going to be a trainee manager in Mulberts, you know. Oh, very good. You start in the stockroom, you've got to learn all the stockroom procedures. And then in the evening, just before the store closes, you go down with this massive broom and you sweep the floor. And I had to do this throughout the day on a Saturday, which was the busiest day, of course. And all my mates could be in saying, I thought you were a trainee manager. I've got a brown duster coat on, a massive broom, so, you know, anyway. Eventually, you become, the common term is a floor walker. And you're given a department to run, and then you go through all the different departments within the store. I was then transferred to Belfast, which is one of the biggest turnover stores in the business. I spent a year in the Belfast store, then was transferred to the very first store that Frank Winfield opened himself in Liverpool, Church Street, Liverpool. It was called Liverpool Number One. And one of the departments I ran then was the confectionery department. And what was nice, the reps would call in, take the lunch round the back to the little pub, pie and a pint. And I used to envy these guys with their expense accounts and their cars. And in Woolworths, you'd work genuinely a 12-hour day, 6 days a week. And you'd get paid a pittance until you got your own store. And so one of the reps was with Macintosh's and said, we're looking for a rep in this area. Would you be interested? And I said, not off. So he made an appointment for me to see their sales manager. I got the job. But when he discovered that my home was the Isle of Man, I was in digs, they created a new position. I was called their floating representative. And for 2 years, I travelled the length and breadth of the whole of British Isles, England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, taking over for a guy who was either off sick or who was ill, on holiday, whatever. And I might spend a month in Southport, as I did, in Scotland. And I had to keep a very accurate account of all my expenses. And in the 2 years I did that, I had 51 different addresses. Mostly they were guest houses, commercial hotels, but it was a fantastic life and I got to see so much of the country that way. I had a friend, Martin Kirby, who was an accountant with Bear Brand Hosiery in Liverpool, and I happened to be sent to Liverpool to work for a couple of weeks, met up with Malcolm, and he said, their reps get paid salary plus commission. I wasn't making any commission, just salary. And they had better cars than the one I had. And they were looking for a rep for the London area. London was divided into four. It was becoming so busy, they split it into five. So I went along and was interviewed and got the job. And the first 6 weeks was dividing up the accounts to make a fifth territory out of London. And the office was based in Conduit Street, just off Regent Street, just across the road from Carnaby Street. The lady that owned and ran Bearbrand, Mrs. Ford, very dynamic lady, came to me one day and said, Mr. Crail, you know, as you are our showroom representative as well, we can't go around dressed in Carnaby Street gear. I want you to go and see my husband's tailor. Just down the road, turn left into Savile Road.
Wow!
Fantastic! So I did, I got measured up, the most immaculate suit I've ever, ever owned. And they said, where do we send the bill, Mr. Quayle? It's Bearbrand. So I said, oh, we don't have an account with Bearbrand. She didn't tell me she wasn't going to pay for it. I had to pay for it. I was paying that suit off for about a year, but it was a fantastic suit. The pressure in those days was enormous because the whole of swinging London was beginning to erupt. This is the early 60s. I went home on holiday. It was September. It was Grand Prix week. And I told my dad, I said, I can't go back to that long tail race. It's just too much. He said, well, you can't just stay. You've got to go back. You've got to work your notice. So I did. And I had no work. Just went home, stayed with mum and dad. And he said, we're not going to keep you like this. You're going to have to find a job. The casino had just moved from the Casa Mona into the Palace Hotel, and they were running a croupier school. And you went along to the croupier school, and then at the end of the week, they picked a half a dozen of us and gave us jobs. And that's what I did. So I spent that winter working for the casino. And to be honest, I hated the work. And I was very lucky that the casino boss, they had landed a contract with Royal Mail Lines to provide gaming on some of their ships. So I spent most of the winter cruising on this fantastic old ship, HMS Andes. And one of the trips we did was all the way around Africa to the Seychelles and then back through the canal to the Mediterranean. And I started as a hobby to make films. I love making home movies. I came back, in those days, there were little 2-inch reels. And I had over 100 of these 2-inch reels, which I edited together. And I also bought one of the first cassette recorders, and I recorded sound effects when I was making film. It wasn't like video today, where everything was all on the one disc. So you then had to dub your sound onto the film. You actually sent your film to Kodak, and they glued a magnetic stripe down the edge, tape. And then you put your sound onto that. And I had an idea what kind of music I wanted. And Peter Neal was a very good friend, known him since I was a tiny kid. And he just started with Manchuria. I went down to the studios on the promenade and I asked if I could borrow a couple of albums. And I did. And I made a couple of visits there. And the chap that was running the station then, his name was Ray Joyce, asked what I was doing, and I told him. And I said, my only problem is I'm trying to do a narrative, but my microphone, you plug it into the projector and you get all the projector noise, which kind of spoils it. So he offered one of the studios, they were closing down at 7 o'clock at night in those days, said, why don't you come down with Peter, sit in one studio with the projector in the other studio so you can watch the film and do your narration. And when I completed the film, he said, why didn't you apply for the job? What job? He said, we've been advertising, we want another announcer. And he said, Laurie Quayle is starting the interviews tomorrow. So he got me an interview, and I was in the final three. So that was the picture you saw next, 1967, when I first started on Manx Radio. A little later, we can do it now, in fact. I'll do it. I'll show you what it was like in 67. I don't know what it is. Of 68. I've only got little speakers, so you'll hear a bit of it all being well. 35 minutes long, then we'll take a break. Now, this is old Super 8 movie. I thought the quality was not that good. The station.